the crack staff behind the glass, excluding Al's brother, have come up with some Romo comments. Let's hear the Faldo one first, and let me set up the situation here. Jordan Spieth put his shot on 16. No, no, sorry.
12.
12 in the water. He went to the drop area and folded the sod over a la Brian Hayes at Tam O'Shantern. And cost himself. Then he did it again, I believe.
Right, he was in the lead, too. Let's point that out.
That's right. And this is how Nick Faldo described that big moment.
Oh, my goodness.
That's it.
Yep.
Now, you want to hear this from your boy, Tony Romo.
This doesn't happen very often. You're going to enjoy this one.
Well.
I don't know if that's really appropriate.
Another one?
Look at this. What a gutsy call with your season on the line.
It's not bad. I mean, the Masters, the green jacket on the line. What a gutsy call.
Gutsy call.
You know.
Yeah, for folding one over the sod.
Eric tweeting and saying, Hayes, your take on Tony Romo is absolutely ridiculous. Kale texting in saying, Hayes is off his rocker today. This is a ridiculous analogy. Romo calling golf is like Shaq calling hockey. No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. It's a completely different sport.
No, it's... Yeah, but he's great at the sport.
Yeah, can Shaq play hockey? I don't think he can.
Not that I'm aware of, anyway. All right, do we have James Duffy, our Masters correspondent? So James is world-renowned for his coverage at Augusta National every year.
Yes, James. Is there anything about Tony Romo covering not only any golfer, Tiger Woods at Augusta National? Would you want to see that?
Wait a second. Before I answer this question, what was everyone's position on this?
Well, your boy Hayes here loves Tony Romo, and he thinks he should start doing golf broadcasts. Not just any golf. Start at the Masters and be the guy on the ground with Tiger Woods. Would you want to hear and see that?
Okay. I'm just pretty sure that in my time at the Masters, I've gotten numerous texts from a certain member of the Overdrive team who says, I should be on your panel. I'd be better than the guys you have.
And I'll tell you what, that's a kick in the pills.
Yeah.
That's a kick in the pills. And I never said that.
And free swag. You're right, Noodles. Free swag, too.
I don't think you suggested that I should be on the panel, just that I could be on the panel.
Yeah.
This was not time for a low blow like that. This is just time to answer the question that was presented.
You know what? I know what you're saying. Like, and you feel like you need somebody. I think what actually always said to me in the time, sometimes it's tough for us to get guys, and you know, you get a guy who hasn't played. You know, we had Brad Fritchie one year. We couldn't get anybody who'd never played Augusta. And you say, well, you know, how can he comment on the Masters? Well, he can comment on the pro game, but can't comment on playing Augusta National. I think if it was a three-man booth, maybe. Like, if you need to have one guy. It's not like a Dennis Miller thing, because Tony Romo has cred in golf. But I think you would still have to have the other guy, whether it be Faldo or whoever. You need the one golf guy who's won a couple of majors. But I'd be entertained by Romo being up there. He's pretty damn good at golf.
Well, and you just used the operative word. This is the entertainment business. Like, I know the Masters feels far from it, right? Like, it feels far from it because of how stuffy it is, and it's all about the history and the heritage and hello, friends, and all that, and the green jacket. But it's entertainment. It's the sports world we're talking about here. This is not science. You know, this is not the medical field, and yeah. Romo is outstanding at it. I find him thoroughly entertaining. The reason we came across the whole conversation was just about his contract, though, James. Like, that was what I'm pointing to. If ESPN's going to ask, you know, put like $10 million on the line for him to go to ESPN, and CBS is going to match, they're probably going to say, okay, we need more out of you.
No,
and that's where I think golf would probably come into play.
But isn't the and I'm sure Owen's argument is this, and I kind of agree with him, but like the credibility, if a guy's about to hit, as you said, the second shot on 15 or whatever, and Romo's saying, you know, I wouldn't go for it or whatever that may be,
how would he know?
He hasn't done that. It's one thing in playing in that, whatever that celebrity tournament that he won the last 2 years. What's that thing called? It's one thing playing in that. It's another playing on Sunday at Augusta National. By the way, on 15, I went for it. I hit the...
That's the same as Romo. Nobody cares.
I hit the grandstand, the empty grandstand behind it, went 50 yards in the air and came back into the water.
Even James, like, if Tiger Woods hit just like a 200-yard fade with an 8-iron, as good as golfer as Romo is, he wouldn't even know what the hell that is. Not a lot of people do.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Exactly. Using Tiger Woods as the example for what you're allowed to talk about, that means no one other than Nicklaus
I would say this. If you were to do something like that, start him at the John Deere Classic or the Greater Hartford Open or whatever.
Not for $10 million a year. For
and $10 million a year, that ain't happening.
But they want him for football.
That's right. $10 million is because he's so good at football.
Yeah, but you guys understand, with the ESPN offer, if it gets to a point where he's doing the first take, he's doing get-up, right, he's doing PTI, he's doing radio, he's doing everything. He's not just calling 16
the
games and going home.
You're right. He's doing the car wash.
You're the best radio host in Toronto, and when you cash in with a big deal, and they said, you got to take over for Al's brother with some updates on just because you got to do
more. I'm not sure about that, too, Brian. I'm not sure about that. Like, that guy's so much in demand right now, he can write his own ticket.
Yeah.
And if ESPN's offering that money and he really wants it, he says, okay, here's what I'm doing. I'm doing, your Monday Night Football, whatever it is, and I'll do one appearance on PTI or whatever. You know, I'll do four a year or something like that. That'll all be in there. I think he's in a position where he's not going to suddenly be have to do work 18 hours a day or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be overexposed, but if we're talking the biggest contract in the history of sports media, I think there's going to be more that comes with it than 16 Monday Night Football games.
He'll be tugged in a lot of different directions.
I think so, and also it could be, what does he want to do? I mean, maybe he wants to do other stuff. Anyway, let's move on to this Connor McDavid story that's really starting to pick up steam, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, James.
We're not going to talk at all about the Packers and the Niners, like not one sentence?
Well, go ahead and take me through. Let's recite your original experience in San Francisco watching a playoff game featuring the Niners and Packers so that I can feel good about something.
Okay, today. So that was 1998, but it was the 1997 NFC Championship game. I think I conned my way into a work assignment in L.A. because I was working in Vancouver for a station out there, and flew to San Francisco, got a sideline pass, pretended I was working. I had a cameraman with me. He had no tape in the camera. I broke every ethical rule possible because I said, Jazz, you don't have to shoot anything. We just have to pretend we're working. And I stood on the sidelines the entire game, and Brett Favre and your Packers, Jerry Rice was hurt, and you guys beat Steve Young and my Niners, and I cried all the way home. So I did feel your pain. And I felt bad the other day because I sent out a tweet of a message. I sent you a message that said, why are you flying there to lose by 17? And I felt bad because it looked like I was kind of humiliating you with the message, but the only point I was trying to make was that I predicted the score.
You nailed it. You nailed it. And I didn't pick up on that at first because I read my own response, and I'm like, that's exactly what I'm about to do. A red-eye home in tears like a loser.
It was my son who said, Dad, why you can't post some of your messages? The guy you're making poor Hayes, he's suffering right now.
No, it's all good.
I said,
man.
No, I was just trying to brag on myself for getting the spread.
You had to. Like, you nailed it. You nailed the 17-point victory.
Yeah, you did.
And it was worse than that. Like, it was, yeah. I jokingly tweeted out, like, hey, it's a respectable score. It was not a respectable game. You got to be feeling pretty good about your team in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was great. It's going to be weird for me. I mean, I'll be professional and unbiased there, but it's the first time I've covered a Super Bowl where I will have a vested interest.
Right.
As a matter of fact, it's the first event I've covered in a long time that I felt like I've really had a vested interest in. So I'll try to be unbiased, I promise.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to go through an ethical course before you fly down there? How does that work here with Big J journalism?
It's all self-regulated, sadly, but
I'll
be fine. You know what, even, it's not like the way I hated Dallas in the old days, or even if it was the Patriots. I have a lot of, I like KC, and I didn't really expect the Niners to get there. So if Patrick Mahomes wins the Super Bowl and is brilliant, I'll be fine.
Quickly, before we move on, I've got to revert to our Tony Romo conversation quickly because someone just absolutely dropped the mic via text. In support of Hayes, Joe Rogan was never a pro MMA fighter, but he is the color commentator for the UFC and has been since day one, and he is
exceptional. Isn't he the play-by-play commentator?
No, he's the color guy.
Yeah, he does.
He comments on technicalities, on taking guys down to the mat. He is off the charts good.
He is.
He's a comic, and a podcast
host.
He's
a very good comic, too. Very good.
And listen, he's into MMA and all that kind of stuff, but there, thank you. Dropping the mic. Are you a Joe Rogan guy?
Are you a Bob Cole fan? I don't think he was ripping home 50 goals doing hockey stuff.
Yeah, but he's doing play-by-play. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Moving
this
on.
This argument has gone off the rails.
We're going to be doing this until 7 o'clock, I guarantee it. Anyway, quickly on McDavid. So our boy Ryan Rashog tweeting out more details, and I guess McDavid's been documenting this, and I believe it's up on YouTube, and it turns out that knee injury he suffered in game 82 a year ago, which immediately the Oilers issued a statement. I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically like, oh, it's a bruise, like it's all good, they'll be fine, just a little bit of rehab. Turns out that it was, you know, bordering on catastrophic, and I'm not using hyperbole here. Like, there were multiple surgeons that were putting forth options for him to have, like, dramatic knee surgery that would have wiped out this whole season and maybe affected the way he played and skated in the future. And he decided instead on a rehab treatment that was very extensive, clearly has worked. But, man, I don't know where to start with this story. Is it the fact that he's playing the way he's playing, or the fact that the info didn't get out? What do you take from this?
I think I live up in Aurora where he trains all summer and where he has a house and people talk. And I did hear some rumblings that it was a really more serious knee injury than had been reported, to the point where I think when Ryan tweeted at the beginning of training camp that McDavid was expected to hopefully start the season, that I think I might have texted him and said, are you sure about that? Because, you know, it wasn't something, a story I chased or anything in the summer, but a bunch of people had said, hey, I've heard McDavid's injury is worse than they're saying. So, you know, those things are funny, right? Some guys have played careers without ACLs, with the ACL missing. I know this is not ACL, so obviously he had at least some sort of medical opinions that said that he could rehab and get strong around it. And he's got guys like Gary Roberts and Matty Nicola and all those guys that know exactly what the heck they're doing. But I guess it's just another statement of how phenomenal an athlete he is, because there has not been one single hitch whatsoever in his skating.
No,
but
yeah,
it makes you worry. Is that still there somehow? If he was to twist it in the wrong way, would that still exist? You know what I mean? It's built muscle around it,
well,
but that tear still exists? I don't know.
Well, and a lot of those specialists, I guarantee you, they're probably tracking him along the season. He may have to have MRIs or CTs, depending on the way they look at it, just to make sure that they're structurally, it is still the way that they want it. But, you know, this is such a high-level athlete that I guarantee you, like, the Oilers weren't just passing this off to, you know, a medi center. Like, they probably had several amazing guys that were involved putting their opinion out. But, you know, Hayes, you were saying off air, and I don't disagree with this, the information process was very kept under wraps. And I don't know what the protocol is, especially in the off season, for Edmonton to report that or at least to get it out. But it sounds like, I mean, McDavid, they kept this mum.
Right, and obviously they believed that was going to benefit him, and I'm sure he was heavily involved, saying,
correct,
I don't want it out.
Like, I don't want it out until I know how it's going to shake out.
But you're talking about the most important player in the world, and it was, the statement issued was effectively, it's nothing.
Yeah,
man.
We'll get back to you.
I'm not sure if that's supposed to be the case or not.
We came back early September, and McDavid were like, yeah, we don't think he's going to play a game. And remember, we were kind of like, okay.
During the preseason?
Yeah, in the preseason.
Yeah.
Sorry, in the preseason. Like, that was...
I think they got away with it, guys, because of the summer. That's the only reason you get away with it. The fact that everybody just kind of disappears and he can go off and train. I think if it was during the regular season, you're right, there has to be more disclosure on that. But I think they were able to just say, yeah, it's you know, everybody kind of moved on and went on with their lives, and that was the only reason they were able to get away with not saying much about it.
Yeah, well, we'll find out more, I'm sure, as he gets to the All-Star game and as we move on here.
Heck of a rehab, though, because he looks pretty fantastic.
He does.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's he looks like you'd never know he had any injury whatsoever the way he's been
looks
playing.
Looks stronger.
That's right. Anyway,
should,
buddy.
Would you listen to Jeff O'Neill on TSN's Masters coverage if there was somebody else like a Mike Weir or a David Hearn in there with him?
Yes, I would.
He knows his golf.
Yes.
Mike Weir wouldn't work with him because of the trunk slamming segment on our show. But outside of that, I think I would, every day of the week, I would actually tune in more to listen to what Jeff O'Neill had to say about golf.
You're looking to see a train wreck.
No, not at all. I'm looking for a breakdown, and I want you to say this guy just soiled himself on 16.
No, that's right.
You would say you just soiled yourself, Jeff, on the set, and I can see it, and that's all.
No.
I think that is a valid comparison. O'Dowd's one of the best hockey analysts in the country.
Yep.
And he's good at golf. Tony Romo's maybe the best football analyst out there, and he's good at golf.
Let's send him to the Masters.
I would listen to Romo in a three-man booth. And I would listen to O'Dowd in the three-man booth.
Yeah, so would I. Khaki suit, swamp ass. It'd be outstanding.
Burman-ish.
Just a full
O'Dowd, if Sean Redmond or Stu or Natalie, our bosses, called you, Kenny Volden, tomorrow and said, we listen to James, or we think it's a good idea, you're going to the Masters, you're not going to say no, are you?
I probably wouldn't say no. Five years ago or 10 years ago, I would have said no, but not now.
But I can't have you because you know my Masters rule. I only let really skinny guys like Weeksy and David Hearn, so I look bigger with my men's small.
Well, yeah, they all wear very tight shirts down there. Yeah.
Boys, medium is
out. I'm just starting my training routine for my. I'm going to go down to boys small this year.
Yeah,
those right arms. Before small. Action, I know you do 85 arm curls on each arm.
Nope, just the one arm, the
just
right
one.
Arm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Get the pump going. You are on fire down there.
All right, How long till we're back? I need to do 20 push-ups.
We'll catch you from the Super Bowl next week.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Here's James Duffy.